ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री नारद उवाच, इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यावर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। इत्युक्ता लोकगुरुणा तं प्रणम्य दिवौकसा न्यवर्तन्त गतोद्वेगा, मेनिरे चासुरं हतम्। Srinaradovacha. The great saint Narada Muni said, Iti, thus, Ukta, addressed, Loka Guruna, by the supreme spiritual master of everyone, Tam, unto him, Pranamya, offering obeisances, Divokasa, all the demigods, Nyavartanta, returned, Gata Udvega, relieved of all anxieties, Menire, they considered, Cha, also, Asuram, the demon Hiranyakashipu, Hatam, killed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The great saint Narada Muni continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual master of everyone, thus reassured all the demigods living in the heavenly planets, they offered their respectful obeisances unto Him and returned, confident that the demon Hiranyakashipu was now practically dead. Please repeat. The great saint Narada Muni continued. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the spiritual master of everyone, thus reassured all the demigods living in the heavenly planets, they offered their respectful obeisances unto Him and returned, confident that the demon Hiranyakashipu was now practically dead. Purport. The less intelligent men who are always busy worshipping the demigods should note that when the demigods are harassed by the demons, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead for relief. Since the demigods resort to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why should the worshippers of the demigods not approach the Supreme Lord for whatever benefits they desire? Srimad Bhagavatam says, Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one desires everything or nothing, or whether he desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. Whether one is a karmi, jnani, or yogi, if one wants a particular benediction fulfilled, even if it be material, one should approach the Supreme Lord and pray to Him, for then it will be fulfilled. There is no need to approach any demigod separately for the fulfillment of any desire. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So our situation in this world is in many ways like that of the demigods. The demigods are devotees of the Lord, but they often come with a lot of material desires, sakama. They've got a lot of desires, fears, problems, issues that they come with. And because they're devotees of the Lord, when these problems arise, they always find themselves approaching Krishna or Lord Vishnu for protection. We can contrast this with the example of Prahlad Maharaj, which comes a little later. Srila Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj had no problems. Right? He was, despite everything he went through, it never occurred to him to ask the Lord to put an end to this. He was confident in the Lord's protection. But that kind of level is a difficult one to obtain, and often the demigods are approaching the Lord for protection, not just in spiritual matters, but also just for material things. Our position in the heavenly planets is insecure, or we've been kicked out of our post. What should we do? Please help us, Lord, and Krishna helps. So, Prabhupada is making a point here in the purport that if we find ourselves saddled with these kinds of material desires, even after many years of performing devotional service, then we ought to approach Krishna for the fulfillment of those desires rather than going to anyone else, anyone powerful here in the material world. Going to Krishna brings with it several advantages. The demigods are quite capable of fulfilling material desires, and they can often do so very quickly, as Krishna says in the Gita. But going to Krishna brings with it many benefits. For one thing, Krishna, He fulfills our material desires in such a way that they don't cause us lasting harm. In other words, He gives it to us in such a way that our desires are fulfilled if we insisting on having something. We can go to Krishna, He'll give us what we want mostly, but He'll give it to us in such a way that it doesn't cause lasting harm to our spiritual life. And so he'll give it in a measured proportion, or he'll also give it with some subtle or sometimes not so subtle reminders about why this is not actually what we're truly looking for. So Krishna, he's careful in how he fulfills our desires. He's careful in how he fulfills them. And in the end, he will also get rid of those desires simply by virtue of his association. Thank you. He'll be able to remove those desires, like in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, for example, who saw Krishna and then realized he went to Krishna looking for a kingdom, and a kingdom greater than his grandfather. And he realized, my God, what am I doing? I don't need this. I have Krishna, therefore why would I want anything else? This never happens when someone goes to anyone but Krishna. If we go to the demigods, if we go to other powerful rich people or whoever might be fulfilling our desire in this world, going to them and even getting what we want never removes the desire for that thing. Sometimes it actually just increases it. And then the third benefit of going to Krishna is that it helps us develop a long-term relationship with Krishna, increases our faith in his protection, which is what we're wanting to get to anyway. Right, so we can help build that relationship even in our condition of wanting material desires, sarvakama. We can build that relationship by going to Krishna, and each time he fulfills one of our desires, or he protects us from our desires, or he protects us in a dangerous situation, we'll feel, oh, Krishna protected me. Right? And that helps build our faith in the Lord. Right? So in this way, going to Krishna has so many benefits that going to anyone else in this world, anyone, doesn't have. It doesn't have. Now, the question is, well, how do we approach Krishna for whatever needs we might have? What is the method? And we find here in this particular chapter where the demigods are approaching Krishna for protection and relief from Hiranyakashipu's tortures. Right? Hiranyakashipu is terrorizing the universe. This is the title of this chapter. Chapter 4 of Canto 7, and the demigods have just approached him asking for protection. How do they approach the Lord? How can we approach the Lord? The first thing we find nearly every devotee doing is when they first approach the Lord, then it says pranamya. Right? They first go to the Lord and they offer obeisance, right? Namami. I offer obeisances. Now, this may seem like, oh, a pretty casual point. Right? Okay, we offer our obeisances, and then we get to the point. Right? Krishna, I need this, or I need that, or help me out with this. The obeisances is just there as a matter of introduction. But actually, offering obeisance is, we find repeated so often in the Srimad Bhagavatam, again and again and again. If you read back maybe just four verses here, four or five verses, the demigods say, Tasyai namostu kashthayai. Right? Therefore, let us offer obeisances to that Supreme Lord. Let us offer obeisances in the direction of the Lord. Namostu. Again and again we find this. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also, in one of the most important verses, his final instruction, he says, Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru, he says, offer obeisances to me, and he puts that right along with thinking of me, becoming my devotee, and sacrificing for me. Right? He puts offering obeisances right there. And we find again and again that devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam are doing this. This phrase, nama, offering obeisances. Think about how many times we say this phrase and how many times we hear it repeated. Nama om Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale. Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharine. Namaste Narasinghaya Prahlada Ladha Dayine. Namo Nama Tulasi Krishna Prayasi. Namo Nama. When Queen Kunti prays to Krishna, she sings so beautifully, Namah Pankajanabhaya, Namo Pankajamaline, Namah Pankajanetraya, Namaste Pankajangre. I offer my obeisances to the lotus-eyed Lord. I offer my obeisances to the lotus-naveled Lord. I offer my obeisances to the lotus feet of the Lord, and so on. Again and again, she's offering obeisances to the Lord. This act of offering obeisances in itself can help solve half of our problem. When we come to the Lord and we offer obeisances to Him. What does this mean, offering obeisance? So many different things. At a very basic level, it's recognition of the Lord's superiority. That the Lord is my master and I am servant. That the Lord is controller. He is the supreme. You find in every religion of the world, people offering obeisance to the Lord. And just like the Muslims, they do this 5 times a day. And it's a recognition that God is great, God is supreme, His power is awesome, He is almighty. Right? And I'm just like a small fly in His presence. So it's a recognition of the Lord's supremacy. It's also an expression of humility. If we do it properly, then it becomes an expression of humility before the Lord. I offer myself to Krishna, I bend down before Him, placing my head upon the ground. You see, most of the causes of our pride in this material world body belong just right here in the head. Right? Our beautiful hair, for example, is a cause for pride. A great intelligence that we believe we possess is a cause for pride. Our nose also is very prominent upon the face. In Hindi, they say, when someone insults you, you say, "Naak kat gayi," or "my nose was cut off," right? When you get insulted or embarrassed badly in public, right? So the nose is prominent. It sticks out farthest on the face. Right? So your nose being cut off is being insulted, right? Very proud of this fact. Our wonderful speech and how nicely we speak and how beautiful our smile is and how our teeth are nicely lined up in one row. So many reasons for pride are there in the head. And when we place this head down at Krishna's lotus feet, it can be an expression of profound humility to the Lord. That my head is here. And we see it's not so easy, right? We can find so many people, even who know who Krishna is, who find it difficult to bend their neck before the Lord. It becomes very, very stiff in front of the Lord. I remember one time in Boise, we had one group come and give classes. They were doing a program. It was a very, very clearly impersonalist group, Mayavadi group. And they came, and afterwards the main speaker the next day came to the temple as a matter of formality because he was from India and it was appropriate to visit the temple. But during the entire visit, it was nearly impossible for him to bend, not nearly, it was impossible for him to bend his neck. Just the day before, he had been preaching how God is present everywhere. And yet when he came to the temple, it was impossible to see God there. And respect Him. Even more difficult than paying obeisances to the Lord becomes to pay obeisances to the spiritual master. After to God Almighty or to someone unseen I can bow down, but to a man, I don't think I could bow down to a man. He's just like me. So, an expression of humility in offering obeisances. Even more, the offering of obeisances can be an offering of one's entire self to the Lord. This is also expressed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything we have, it says, that famous verse, Tattenu kampam susamikshamanam bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam hrid vag vapurbhir vidadhan namaste. Right? I'm offering obeisances to the Lord. Namaste, again that word nama is there. Namaste, hrid vag vapurbhir. With heart, with speech, and with body. All three. I'm offering my obeisances to the Lord. So offering obeisances becomes an act of complete self-surrender to the Lord. This is why when we offer obeisances, Srila Prabhupada, he asked us specifically, right, that when we're down there on the ground, that we recite the pranam prayers for our spiritual master. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutal Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tina. Like this. We offer our obeisances. And Prabhupada requested also that when we're offering our obeisances like this to the spiritual master, then you should chant the pranam prayers, he says, loud enough where I can hear them. Loud enough where I can hear them. And what's the point of this? What's the point? Is that in this way, when we're offering obeisances, we're also offering vach, right? We're offering our speech to the Lord as well by pronouncing these pranam prayers. We're offering our body, obviously, it's on the ground, right? We're offering our speech. And the hope is that just by chance, we might also feel something when we're offering our obeisances to the Lord, right? Maybe. One time, one of Srila Prabhupada's servants was coming in the room serving him. And like any good disciple does, when he came into the room, he'd offer his obeisances, and then he'd get whatever he needed, offered his obeisances, and go out. Then he'd go back again, offer his obeisances, and go out. And Srila Prabhupada, at some point, when his servant came in, Prabhupada said, what is this hatchet? And the devotee said, Prabhupada, I don't understand. He said, what is this hatchet? Then the devotee understood. Prabhupada was talking about this offering of obeisances. Coming in, boom, hitting the floor, running in, getting something, boom, hitting the floor, coming out. And Prabhupada felt it was like a hatchet motion, like an axe cutting up and down, up and down. And his point was, no, this is not how we do obeisances. We go down on the floor and we pay properly, Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale, with our hands outstretched, whether we're doing halfway or full way, right? Hands outstretched ahead. See, Krishna, I have nothing, right? I'm here, I'm in a vulnerable situation before you. It's a very, paying dandavats especially, it's a very vulnerable position, right? It's very difficult to get up quickly from that position. You know, when they do, what is it, wrestling or boxing, then they have to get the guy down on the floor, on his back, for what, 3 seconds or something like that? So once you're down, this is not just the back, this is the stomach, right? It's very difficult to protect yourself in any way in that position. You can't see anything, your hands are out in front of you. Right? It's a vulnerable position before the Lord. Krishna, I am yours. Tavasmi iti yachate. My Lord, I am yours here. And in this way, this simple activity of paying obeisances to the Lord can become so deep. Right? It can take on deeper and deeper and deeper meanings. When Dhruva Maharaj, for example, after 6 months of meditation, he sees the Lord. The Lord gives him darshan directly, face to face. And when he sees the Lord, the first thing he does, Bhagavatam describes, dandavat. He comes down on the ground like a stick falling on the ground. And as he's paying obeisances, it's a beautiful description. It says, Dhruva Maharaj is embracing the lotus feet of the Lord as he's paying obeisances. Imagine, what a powerful, what a deep, what a wonderful activity paying obeisances can be. We have our hands outstretched. Why? Because Krishna's lotus feet are there. And Dhruva Maharaj is meditating like this, that I am embracing Krishna's lotus feet. So this simple activity in devotional service, Mam Namaskuru, right, we find is sort of the first step, right, first step, where we come to Krishna for any reason. First thing we do is we offer obeisances. Okay, then what do we do? This is sort of a how to ask Krishna for something class. Right? What's the formula? How do we ask Krishna for something? Okay. We offer obeisances first before the Lord in this mood of humility, of self-surrender. And then we find that when devotees are getting ready to ask Krishna for something, then before they ask, they always do one more thing. Right? What is that one thing they do? They pay obeisances, then glorify him, right? They praise the Lord. You find even in times of desperation, when there's not much time, they find time to do this. Just like when the Brahmastra is coming behind Arjuna and ready to kill the Pandavas, right? When weapons come, especially the Brahmastra, there's not much time to do anything, right? He runs to Krishna, and before he states the nature of the problem, which, okay, is quite obvious, but he says, Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhaktanam Abhayankara Twameko Dahyamananam Apavargosi Samsite. Krishna, you are the only source of fearlessness for your devotees, especially for those who are burning in this fire of material existence. Apavargosi Samsite. Same thing when Uttara, when the Brahmastra is redirected towards Uttara, Maharaj Parikshit's mother. Then she also, Krishna Krishna Mahayogin. She again takes the time, at least for one verse, to offer a prayer of praise to the Lord before she addresses the problem that he's facing, that she's facing. So offering some praise is so important. Right? Offering some praise. That Krishna, here's why I'm here. Let me try to please you. I know I'm here for a selfish reason, but let me try to please you a little bit before I get into my problem. Right? Before I start talking about myself. And then the devotees state their problem before the Lord, as the demigods did here. And I have this issue, please help me. And Prabhupada says we can come to the Lord and we can say, Sir, I have a problem. And Krishna will help. Krishna will help. One of the nicest times to ask Krishna for something is during Mangalarti. This is a wonderful time. Krishna, he's in a very, very sweet mood at this time. He's just woken up, right? So he's still sleepy, little bit. And as soon as he wakes up, Krishna does what? First thing, he eats sweets, milk sweets, right? A whole bowl full of sweets. Now this is inappropriate behavior for anyone, practically speaking. If you train a child like this, you're bound to spoil them for life. So, but Krishna, he wakes up and he fills his mouth with sweets. So he's half asleep and he's just eaten lots of sweets. And then we come before him and we say, Krishna, I want this. And Krishna, practically he'll give us anything during Mangalarti. Right? You say, oh, well, okay, yeah, well, whatever. Yes, take it. Right? Take it. It's a nice time to ask the Lord for something. Then by 7 o'clock, he's more in a formal mood. Okay, do you deserve this? Is this the right thing for you? So on and so forth. So it's a very intimate time, and also a very risky time for that reason. Krishna will fulfill any desire with some less discrimination. Right? So Mangalarti is a nice time. We can come to the Lord. We offer obeisances very nicely. The morning program is set up so nicely by Srila Prabhupada that all the elements that Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita are there. Right? Mam Namaskuru. When the greeting happens, 3 times we offer obeisances to Krishna. And we offer prayers. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. We can take the opportunity to offer our own prayers of glorification. Then in this mood, when we ask something from Krishna, Krishna is very pleased. Very pleased. Now, next thing, to move on here quickly. Okay, what can we expect then as a response from Krishna? So we've done things nicely. We've offered our prayer before the Lord. What can we expect? That also, here in this chapter, we find a very nice model for what we can expect Krishna, how we can expect him to respond. When the demigods offer their prayers, Krishna is pleased. And he responds. But how does he respond? For one thing, the demigods don't see Krishna. They hear his voice. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that it's all too easy to expect Krishna to just show himself in front of us and do what we need. We might think that, okay, I've asked something from Krishna, why is he not doing something, right? But the first thing we can expect about Krishna's response is that we shouldn't expect anything too melodramatic. Even the demigods go to the Lord and they offer their prayers, Purusha Sukta and so many things. They're the Lord's very powerful servants in this world with nearly direct access to the Lord through Lord Brahma. And even they hear only Krishna's voice. So, for one thing is we shouldn't have unreasonable expectations of Krishna. That I just asked him something this morning and no miracle has transformed my life yet. It'll happen, right? But we should we should try to listen for Krishna's voice. And Krishna's voice comes to us in many different ways. Through the voice of scripture. This is one of the most important ways. I'm sure many of us have had this experience before of opening up the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam in times of difficulty and having the Srimad Bhagavatam speak directly to us. Whatever we were thinking about, whatever issue we had, just right there, Srila Prabhupada, Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami is saying something that addresses what we have, and we think, okay, Krishna, I know you're listening. Through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, through the voice of devotees whom we ask for advice, through some indication in our own circumstances of life, through hearing Krishna's voice in our heart, right? So many different ways, through the instruction of the spiritual master, we can hear Krishna's voice. Sometimes Krishna comes down on the back of Garuda like he did for Gajendra, the king of elephants, and does something very dramatic. And he'll do this sometimes, maybe once in our lifetime, maybe a second time. But we shouldn't expect this of Krishna on a regular basis. Krishna speaks to us in so many different ways. That's one thing. The second thing we see in his response to the demigods. The first thing Krishna says when he speaks up. First thing he says is, okay, don't expect my darshan. He says, he says very clearly, mad darshanam, my audience is very difficult, very rare, and it's very beneficial. Right? But my voice is enough, vani. But when he does speak, the first thing he says, gnyatam, gnyatam etasya doratmyam. My dear demigods, I know. I know about the wickedness of this king. So that's the second thing we can expect. When we come to Krishna, we present our problems. It's for our own benefit. But we should be rest assured, Krishna knows. And he's saying, Gnyatam, I know already what you're saying. Right? I know the problems this man is causing you. Don't worry. Just that fact, realizing that Krishna knows what I'm going through, that in itself is a huge relief. Oh, Krishna knows. Someone knows at least. Right? Maybe people don't identify, but someone knows. Krishna knows. And then Krishna gets to the heart of the matter. He makes a promise. He says, Tasya shantim karishyami. I will take care of him. I will bring you peace. I will make him peaceful. Tasya shantim karishyami. But what do I ask of you? He tells the demigods. And this is perhaps the most difficult thing about going to Krishna and asking for something. What does he tell them? Kalam tavat pratikshata. But until I choose to do something, you please wait. Wait patiently until I decide I'm going to do something about this. So that's what we can expect from Krishna's response. That's perhaps the most difficult thing. We expect, okay, it won't be a melodramatic incident of Krishna descending on Garuda. If it does, then we are the most fortunate people in this world, but otherwise we're also fortunate. Krishna will speak to us. We should look to hear his voice. Second thing is, okay, I understand. Krishna knows already. I'm coming to him because I have a heavy heart. By coming to Krishna, I will be relieved. But third thing we expect is it'll take a little bit of time. Krishna always acts. He always acts in everyone's welfare. But he always takes a little bit of time. And that's very, very important. Right? The taking of time is basically Krishna's way of instilling faith in his devotees. Because that period between our asking and Krishna acting, that's the faith-building period. That's the time where our faith deepens. Because we asked, so we expect results. And yet they're not coming. So will they come? Will Krishna follow through? And we may even question. I would wonder often as a child. I used to think, watching these films of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Prahlad is pushed off of a cliff by Hiranyakashipu's men. And he's falling. And then at the bottom, Krishna catches him and protects him, and saves him. And I used to wonder, why is it that Krishna catches him at the bottom? Right? Why does he catch him at the bottom? That whole fall down. How frightening it must be without a parachute. Right? Anyway, skydiving is frightening for me. Right? But without a parachute, Krishna's catching him at the bottom. Why not just catch him right at the top and save him all the pain of coming down? Or why not just push away the very people who are trying to push them down, right? The cliff. That would be easier. And Prahlad could watch with happiness. Ah, see, Krishna's protecting me. But instead, Krishna allows him to be pushed off and then catches at the bottom. This is the popular representation, at least. Right? I don't know if Bhagavatam specifically describes Krishna catching. But the point is this, right? The point is this. That it's that fall down, that journey downward, right? When we've been pushed off the cliff and before we've been caught, that's the faith-building experience that Krishna gives us. Kalam tavat pratikshata, wait that long. Because as we're coming down, we're thinking, oh, Krishna will protect me. I'm sure he'll protect me. Will he protect me? Oh my God, the ground is coming closer. I don't know. Is Krishna there? Does Krishna even exist? After 15 years of devotional service, is this what Krishna is going to give me? Is a splash on concrete? Is this how he treats me? And our faith, we struggle with it. And then finally when Krishna comes and catches us at the bottom, we think, oh, wow, Krishna is so merciful. Why did I ever question him? Why did I ever think Krishna would not come through? He's so wonderful. And the next time this happens, our faith is a little stronger. And the next time, it's even stronger. And it's next time, it's even stronger until we come to the point of Prahlad Maharaj, where Prahlad Maharaj feels not even the need to ask Krishna for protection, but simply is completely confident in that protection. Rakshishyatiti Vishvasa. He's confident. Krishna will protect me. I know this. Right. So this is... This chapter provides us with a beautiful formula, right, for how to ask Krishna of something. Because we often do. Even great devotees sometimes, they may not do it for selfish desire, but they still come to Krishna and ask. Right? So we can ask, as Prabhupada is saying. Better we ask Krishna than anyone else. And here's how. Right? Here's a wonderful example of how we can come to Krishna and ask. So I will stop here and see if there are any questions or comments that anyone would like to add. Yes, Prabhu.
Yes, you mentioned how Krishna, our desires during Mangala Arati, he easily fulfills that. Where is that stated in Shastra?
This is not, as far as I know, from Shastra. This is something that I heard from Hanumat Presha Goswami, my spiritual master, which he was speaking from his personal experience, as far as I can gather. He is someone who's a, a fanatical attendee at Mangalarti. He hasn't missed a Mangalarti for the past 30 years or so. And practically everything he needs to get done in his spiritual life, he gets done during Mangalarti. It's a fact. Everything from his prayers for preaching activities, to his spiritual cultivation of his relationship with Krishna, to his practice of yoga, to his health, everything happens during Mangalarti, by dancing before Krishna during Mangalarti. So I suspect this is from his personal experience, although I could ask him if he has any other background for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes,
Maharaj. You mentioned the Muslims' prayers, you know, that's called namaz.
Yes, namaz.
Comes
that's
from
an
Sanskrit.
Interesting point. Right.
Very nice. Thank you very much. That's very good for me. I'm very impatient. And
thank you. Yeah. This it just brings to mind this word nama is so special. It said that no mantra is possible without this word nama. You see, Om Namo Narayanaya, Namaste Narasinghaya, Namah Shivaya. Nama is indispensable, and therefore the ending that goes with this is this ending Aya. If you've ever wondered, Krishnaya Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Nam. why this ayah is there. This is the dative case. I offer obeisances to, right? And this is our mood before the Lord. We're always, the Lord is in the dative case. We're giving ourselves to Krishna again and again. Nama, nama. Only the Maha Mantra doesn't require nama because doesn't even require the power of mantra. Right? This is Krishna's holy name. So with mantras come rules and regulations. With any nama mantra, just like we, Guru's pranam prayers have nama in them. So we say, okay, after 6 months, you develop a relationship with your spiritual master, he gives you permission, then you can chant his pranam prayers. Right? So there's some regulation there. But Krishna's holy name doesn't require nama, and it requires no regulation. It's just Krishna's name. Right? But this word nama is very special. Anything else? Yes, Amala Bhakta Prabhu?
Thank you for a wonderful class, very much enjoyable. I just wanted to raise one point in regard to the word protection and the way that you have used it, which is primarily protecting of our body, protecting of our home, protecting of our family, which is the normal way to understand it. But Krishna giving us protection can go far beyond just the physical and material aspects. He can clobber us, he can kick us, he can smash us, and that can be his protection because yes. We are often vain, we are complacent, we're conceited, we're proud, and the only way he can protect us from those horrible horrible qualities is to put us in a circumstance whereby we become so helpless that we actually then cry out, Krishna, I got the message. Yes. I understand.
Yes.
I understand. I've been so proud and I've been so unsubmissive. I've been thinking I'm the all in all. So please, thank you so much for what you have given us. So I know there's protection takes on a different meaning here yes. as opposed to the materialistic meaning. For a devotee, whatever Krishna wants to give us, be it pain, pleasure, indifference, whatever is in our best interest. And if we can learn to surrender to that principle, which is not an easy thing to do,
right.
But if we can remain faithful to that principle that Krishna knows everything and we know so little, then we will be in very good sorts and we will always be happy and content because we know that Krishna is looking after us and giving us just what we need, not any more, not any less, and will take us to the next step of spiritual advancement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is a wonderful, wonderful point. We'll end with this very nice comment. And I'll just add one sentence to this, namely, you know, the average person, when he has a problem, then the first reaction they have, or we have sometimes, is to find someone else to blame. It's that person's fault. Someone who's a little bit more advanced thinks, no, it's my karma, right? And this you find also people have this understanding. This is my karma. In other words, it's my fault. But a devotee's mood is yet one step higher, right? That it's not their fault. It's not even my fault. Well, in some sense it is, right? But ultimately, it's Krishna's mercy. Right? Krishna's mercy, and he's giving this to me for a very special reason, for my own benefit. So, and Prabhupada talks about this very nicely in Krishna book, these three different stages, how we can blame different places, we can even get in the cycle of self-blame, but a devotee says, no, this is Krishna's mercy for my benefit. So, thank you so much, very much for that comment and for everyone else. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.